For those of you that got the sermon handouts, I don't know what I was doing when I made them. I must have been asleep or something. Because as I was going over them this afternoon, I thought, man, there's a lot of mistakes in here. And I was going to tell you about the first one, which is the very first sentence. But then I thought, oh man, as I went through it, I thought I'd have to tell them about the whole thing. So just listen carefully and you'll figure it out. Jesus began his ministry with 8 blessings and ended it with 8 woes. The blessings are the Beatitudes found in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5. The woes are in Matthew 23, which we'll be looking at tonight. The Beatitudes begin the Sermon on the Mount. What a sermon introduction that was. But shortly after giving the Beatitudes, Jesus then, interestingly, gave a warning about the Pharisees. He said in Matthew 5, verse 20, these words, "For I say unto you, that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven." So it's interesting that right after giving the Beatitudes, he then talks about the Pharisees and their righteousness, and then he ends his ministry talking about the Pharisees and their righteousness. The 8 woes that he gives in Matthew 23 expose the false righteousness of the Pharisees. I think when we see these, as well as the introduction that he gives to his sermon on the woes, and his conclusion to that same sermon, we will understand why it took more than the righteousness of the Pharisees to be able to enter into heaven. These men were fakes. But Jesus wants genuine followers. People who truly want to be like Him. Now, this sermon begins, Matthew 23, verses 1 through 4. The Pharisees talked, but they did not walk. Here's how he began. "Then Jesus spoke to the multitudes and to his disciples, saying, The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do. But do not do according to their works. For they say and do not do. For they bind heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers." How could Jesus say to the Jews and the apostles that they should listen to the Pharisees? Well, the Pharisees were in the position of Moses as leaders of Israel and when teaching. So that the Jews and the apostles, when they listened to the Pharisees, were not really listening to the Pharisees, they were listening to Moses. But Jesus knew that shortly after this, the Pharisees would crucify him. And his friends, the apostles, would know that. Therefore, they would be tempted to despise those men and anything associated with them and anything they taught, even when they were teaching the truth. Jesus did not want his apostles to reject the truth because it came from the mouth of a Pharisee, when indeed they were speaking the truth. The truth delivered by Moses was still the truth in the hands of the Pharisees. Yet the apostles were not to look at the lives of the Pharisees. They told others what to do, but they did not do it themselves. In fact, they were belligerent in telling others what to do, and they demanded that others do heavy works. So they thought that was their lot in life. We're the ones who tell everybody what to do. We're the critics, and that relieves us of doing the same thing. We're the courageous ones to do the teaching here and order everyone else around. And would they offer any assistance? Jesus said no. They were not about helping others. But when we encounter someone like that, that we think is Pharisaic, or anyone that we have a problem with, or if we know they have a problem with us, if he or she is speaking the truth, we should still listen. We need to be like the Ninevites, who obeyed the preaching of Jonah, although Jonah could not stand them. I've always admired that about the Ninevites in the book of Jonah. Next, verses 5 through 12. The Pharisees loved recognition. But all their works they do to be seen by men. They make their phylacteries broad and enlarge the borders of their garments. They love the best places at feasts, the best seats in the synagogues, greetings in the marketplaces, and to be called by men, Rabbi, Rabbi. But you do not be called Rabbi, for one is your teacher, the Christ, and you are all brethren. Do not call anyone on earth your father, for one is your father, he who is in heaven. And do not be called teachers, for one is your teacher, the Christ. But he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. And whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Well, they wore clothes to look righteous. They wore certain clothes. They decorated themselves so that when you saw a Pharisee, you concluded, now there is a righteous man. They loved recognition, whether at a party, a place of worship, in public, or with titles. Because they were into promoting themselves, not God or others. Jesus opposed all such self-seeking recognition. He forbid the wearing of religious titles because doing so, then one person is exalted above another. But he said, we have one exalted teacher who is Jesus Christ himself. We have one exalted Father, and that's the God of Jesus Christ. If you want to be great, he said, be busy serving others rather than looking to be served. If you exalt yourself, someone will humble you. But if you humble yourself, someone will exalt you. Now, remember what I said at the very beginning. Jesus began his ministry with 8 blessings. And next we're going to see him end it with 8 woes. And then I also want you to notice this. The woes correspond in order to the blessings. And I'll point that out to you as we go through this. Verse 13. The Pharisees shut up the kingdom of heaven. Jesus said, but woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for you neither go in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. Contrast that with the first beatitude, Matthew 5:3. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. poor in spirit enter heaven, but the proud in spirit are barred from entering into heaven. Remember how the Pharisee prayed? I showed this to you a couple of weeks ago from Luke chapter 18. When he stood and prayed with himself in the temple, God, I thank you that I am not like other men. And then he went on to say, I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. He was proud in spirit. And remember, Jesus warned in Matthew 5:20 that unless our righteousness exceeds the righteousness of those Pharisees, we are not going to heaven. The Pharisees were not heaven-bound, but hell-bound. However, like the devil, that was not good enough. They want to take others with them. Verse 14. The Pharisees were two-faced. Jesus again said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers. Therefore, you will receive greater condemnation." Contrast that with the second beatitude, Matthew 5, verse 4. "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." They did not mourn the death of a woman's husband, but saw an opportunity for gain. They were corrupt and greedy in their business dealings, but then went to the temple or the synagogue and made a long prayer so that everyone would be impressed with how righteous they were. Jesus said, such hypocrisy receives greater condemnation. Greater condemnation than the one who would devour a widow's house, but not do it under religious pretenses. The hypocrisy of the Pharisees received greater condemnation than the bold thief. The Pharisees received greater condemnation because they committed greater sin. Brethren, not all sin is alike. I know we tell ourselves that it's all the same inside of God, but it's not. God, right here in the flesh, is showing us some sins are greater than others, even in the sight of God, and that's why it receives greater condemnation. Verse 15. The Pharisees made sons of hell. Verse 15. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you travel land and sea to make one proselyte, to win one proselyte. And when he is won, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves." Contrast that with the third beatitude, Matthew 5:5. "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." The Pharisees did not change the world. They tried to change the world, but they ended up making sons of hell instead. Meekness is how we gain people and bring them to heaven. The Pharisees were zealots, which led them to evangelize. We're zealous for what we believe. That leads us to evangelize. But they were zealots for their particular way of thinking, and so they were vocal. And they gossiped. And they worked to convert people to their way of thinking. Verses 16 to 22. The Pharisees emphasized the wrong things. 16 to 22. "Woe to you, blind guides, who say, whoever swears by the temple, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he is obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, for which is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold? And whoever swears by the altar, it is nothing. That's another thing they would say. But whoever swears by the gift that is on it, he is obliged to perform it. Jesus again refutes that. Fools and blind, for which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift? Therefore, he who swears by the altar swears by it and by all things on it. He who swears by the temple swears by it and by him who dwells in it. And he who swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and by him who sits on it. Contrast that with the fourth beatitude. Matthew 5:6. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. The Pharisees did not hunger and thirst for doing what was right, but they hungered for excusing themselves when they didn't do what was right. He played word games and split hairs. The Pharisee had a clever way of getting himself out of things. In the matter of swearing, he would swear by the temple or the altar. And if he failed to carry out what he had promised, he would say, "Oh, well, I only swore by the temple. I only swore by the altar. I didn't swear by God Himself or by the gold that's in the temple or by the gift that's on the altar. So I'm not obliged to perform what I promise." But Jesus said he failed to understand what made the gold significant. It was a temple. He failed to understand what made the gift matter. It was the altar upon which it was sitting. Jesus explained that by swearing, we are swearing by God because everything is connected with God. I can say that I swear by this pulpit that I'll do such and such for you this week. And then I fail to do it, and I say, "Well, I wasn't swearing by God Himself. I was just swearing by the pulpit." But who made the wood that the pulpit is made out of? And why was it made? Its primary purpose is for worshiping God. So you can just do that with everything on this earth. It's connected with God. So ultimately, when we swear, we're swearing by God. So when you swear to do something, just do it. And don't look for a way out of it, is what he was teaching us. Verses 23 and 24. The Pharisees neglected weightier matters. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you tithe mint and anise and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel." The fifth beatitude is contrasted with these words. Matthew 5:7. "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy." The Pharisee was inconsistent. He would avoid the smallest unclean creature, the gnat, but swallow the largest unclean creature, the camel. That is, he would tithe spices and herbs, but he gave no attention to mercy, of which God speaks a whole lot more in the Bible than He does tithing those small things. Since they neglected mercy, they would not receive any. They made mountains out of molehills and molehills out of mountains. For you see, it is easier to tithe spices than it is to live justly and mercifully and faithfully. Verses 25 and 26. The Pharisees cleaned the outside only. Jesus said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first cleanse the inside of the cup and dish, that the outside of them may be clean also." Contrast that with the sixth beatitude, Matthew 5:8. "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." You see, everything on the outside of the Pharisee was perfect, but his heart was full of extortion and self-indulgence. And so they did not see God nor understand His ways. Interestingly, our secular society is following the same path. I don't know if it's an exaggeration to say every day, but I'm going to say at least every week, I hear something new in the news that we're to avoid, that'll harm your body. Don't touch public door handles. Or don't do this, and don't eat that, and don't go here, and don't go there. And do everything to avoid harming the body, but at the same time, they allow everything under heaven to enter on the inside. Don't get a germ by shaking someone's hand, but the Constitution guarantees you every vile deed you want to put on the inside. Or so they say it does. I don't think it does, but that's how they reason. Interesting. Have you noticed that? Or is that just me? If you've never noticed it before, listen to the news. And listen to how they respond to possible harm to the body. And then how they respond to things that might harm the spirit. It is amazing. It reminds me of something I just heard this week, in fact. Again, you know about how they're trying so hard that, you know, make sure you eat all these fruits and vegetables and then eat them for these reasons, so forth and so on. But in the on the East Coast, I heard just this week, they're actually going to allow someone to come into the classroom, I think it was third and fourth graders, to teach them about homosexuality. That's amazing. Avoid anything that hurts the body, but fill yourself with filth. All right, verses 27 and 28. The Pharisees appeared beautiful to men. Jesus continued, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." Contrast that with the seventh beatitude found in Matthew 5:9. "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." The Pharisees looked like holy men. Don't be fooled. Inside was a rotting corpse. What an example Jesus gave of a tomb. When I was preparing my sermon this week, the first thing that came into my mind about a beautiful tomb was the tomb of the unknown soldier. And I just wanted to get a picture in my mind again of its reverence and how it looks. And so I got on the internet, typed in Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and the first thing that came up was not the one here in America, but the one in Russia, which I just happened to see back in 1993, right outside Red Square. And the moment I saw it, I thought, oh yeah, I remember all that, and it's beautiful. It is gorgeous. You can tell the great reverence and honor they give to their soldiers, including one that they didn't know his name. And then I looked at the second one that came up, and it was, of course, the one here. Same thing. We honor our soldiers and we want to remember even the one who we don't know who he is. But I wonder what we would see if they opened up the tomb. What is inside? It's not a beautiful sight. Of course, it's not just the tomb of the unknown soldier, but it would be true of any. Verses 29 through 36, the last woe. The Pharisees persecuted the righteous. Verses 29 through 36. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous, and say, if we had lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Therefore, you are witnesses against yourselves that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up, then, the measure of your father's guilt. Serpents, brood of vipers, how can you escape the condemnation of hell? Therefore, indeed, I send you prophets, wise men, and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, that on you may come all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. Assuredly, I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation. Contrast that with the last beatitude. Matthew 5, verse 10. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Jesus blessed the persecuted and cursed the persecutor. The Pharisee honored the tombs of past great men and yet did not understand what those great men were all about. And by their arrogance, these Pharisees said, man, if we had lived back then, we wouldn't have done that. Being totally blind, as he said, blind and fools, fools and blind, they were blind to their own arrogance. They claimed a brotherhood with those men, but then those men whom they were honoring spoke against such adoration of a tomb that is mere stone. They spoke against idolatry. And to prove his point, we all know, of course, that the Pharisees were the prime drivers behind killing Jesus and persecuting the followers of Jesus Christ. Amazingly, listen to how Jesus ends his sermon. It's not with hate. Look at the love of Jesus. 37 to 39. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stoned those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I say to you, you shall see me no more till you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. The Pharisees were repugnant, but Jesus still cared for them and the city of Jerusalem. But he promised, I suppose, to fulfill their wish, he promised to cease trying to gather them as a hen gathers her chicks. When the Romans attacked 40 years later in AD 70, that was proof that Jesus pulled away from them. They didn't want anything to do with him. Finally, after centuries of trying to pull them together, he says, okay, I leave you to yourself. And that's what happened to them. Yet, amazingly, in verse 39, He still held out hope to the Pharisees and Jerusalem, promising that they could see Him again when they recognized that He came in the name of the Lord. You're not going to see me again. I'm out of here. You don't have to worry about me anymore. I'll be gone shortly. But you can see me again when you're converted. He said that to the Pharisees. When you finally change your hearts, then you'll see me again and you'll recognize that I have come in the name of the Lord and you'll bless me. Hate did not prompt this sermon of Jesus, but a broken heart. The Pharisees had open eyes to the faults of others, but closed eyes to their own faults. And listen to His closing words again. He wanted to gather the people of Jerusalem into His arms, but they refused His invitation. And He wants to gather you into His arms also. Listen to Him earlier in Matthew. In Matthew chapter 11, Jesus said to all of us these words, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. I want you, but I want you to want me," He said. So are you ready to receive Him as He was willing to receive you? Can we help you tonight? Do you have a need? Do you need to become a Christian? Are you a Christian who needs to rededicate yourself? There's some way we can be of service. Please come forward now as we stand and sing.